Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. And anytime I have a chance to play this old song, I do. I don't know why I love it so much. It actually sort of kind of pertains to today's topic. I have an author. He's written a book called Clutch. His name is Paul Sullivan, and we're talking about clutch, as in clutch players, people who can face a clutch situation. Do I have that right, Paul?
You absolutely do.
They make a lot of fun of Seattle sports teams up here because they say we can't do it in the clutch. Except for our
Think of Ichiro. He's a great ball player. He gets more hits than anybody else.
Well, then I'm wrong on the individual account, and maybe the team as a whole can't do a clutch.
Well, you know, as I say in the book, being clutch is deeply personal.
Okay, then it's an individual thing.
It is.
Okay, I have to take it back to about one of our teams before we go on, or I'll never be able to concentrate. Our Seattle Storm won the WNBA championships, and in every single game of those last six games, clutch, 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 Sue Bird kept hitting three-pointers in the last 30 seconds, 12 seconds, 5 seconds, 3 seconds.
She's good at them, then.
She's a clutch player.
Yeah, but what I'd argue is that, you know, she can make those three-pointers at any time, and what makes her clutch is the ability to do what she can do normally under pressure, and that's what distinguishes, you know, very good players, very good business people, very good parents from those who are clutch performers.
You say there's a science behind this.
Well, I say there's a method behind it, and, you know, through a lot of research, through, you know, a couple years of talks with people who are both clutch performers and people who are chokers, identified five traits of those shared by all clutch performers, regardless of what they do. And I also found three common qualities of people who choke under pressure.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear them.
You want to hear them?
Yeah, right, well,
duh.
Don't make me read your book.
Well, as long as you buy it, you don't
exactly
have to read it. The five traits for people who are great under pressure are focus, discipline, adaptability, being present, and what I call the push and pull of fear and desire. And if we just take one there, take the first one, focus, some listeners may be thinking, okay, I probably focus, right? I can focus. And I'd argue that most people confuse concentration with focus. Concentration is, you know, driving your car home on the highway. Focus is driving a Ferrari at 200 miles an hour on a racetrack, and it belongs to your friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different mindset, but focus is what allows people who are going to be good under pressure to block everything else out, and it allows the other four traits to even be possible.
Right. What a trip. What about confidence in all of that?
Yeah, I mean, confidence is important, and there's, you know, of the three qualities that hobble people, overconfidence is one of the three. And so, you know, one of the athletes I talked to, a golfer named Jeff Ogilvy, who won the U.S. Open in 2006, he said, you know, crazy confidence is detrimental, but self-belief is crucial. So, you know, the guy who swaggers in there and says, you know, I can do this, I do it every day, nobody's going to beat me, may not be the person who can come through under pressure, as opposed to, you know, the example you give, the Sue Birds of the world, who have great self-belief, and you know, they feel that they can make those three-point shots normally. So, guess what? They're professional athletes. Why wouldn't they be able to make those shots?
Absolutely.
Under pressure.
Well, I feel that way, don't you? When you're watching a game, it's like, dude, I could have missed that.
I never say that because I've actually missed those shots myself, and I know that horrible sinking feeling. So I'm the softy on this, and I feel bad for those folks.
Okay, well, tell me your experiences when you were playing golf.
Yeah, I mean, there's a funny reason and a serious reason why I started to write this book. And the funny one, at least now, is that as a kid, I played a lot of golf with my grandfather, and we had, you know, fantastic times together, and I was good. I was, you know, single-digit handicap, and so I entered a few tournaments, and invariably, I would choke. I'd shoot, you know, 10, 15 strokes higher, and it just would be soul-crushing. And at a certain point, I stopped playing tournaments, but I then got invited to nice country clubs, and the same thing happened. I said, boy, I'm never going to be at this nice country club again. I, you know, have to go back to my crummy public course. I better play well, and I'd choke.
No.
And, you know, back in 2007, 2008, when I was, you know, kind of surveying the landscape, but, you know, I'm also a business columnist for the New York Times, I was seeing all of these otherwise, you know, bright, intelligent, capable people across a range of professions failing under pressure. And I thought to myself, why? You know, mm-hmm. You would seem like, you know, they'd risen to the top of their field, whatever it was. You know, law, banking, you know, the military, even acting. And I
being
thought,
an econ writer, business writer for the New York Times.
Right. Yeah,
that's scary.
Scary. And I thought, why is this happening? These guys should be better. You know, mm-hmm. They should be much better under pressure. And that was kind of, that was the real start of the book. You know, and I always remember choking on the golf course, but you know, ultimately, that doesn't matter. If I have a bad round of golf, that's not how I make my living. It matters to the country when, you know, leaders across a range of professions fail under pressure. And I think it matters to each of us, if at all possible, if we can become better under pressure. You know, I think, you know, the stay-at-home mom with three kids has a ton of pressure on her. It's not the same as running, you know, JPMorgan Chase, but it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard and exhausting, and, you know, you've got to keep it together.
Yeah.
So you're saying these are learned behaviors. Clutch players are not. It is not just this thing some few people like Sue Bird are born with.
Absolutely not. Yeah, every single person in my book was not born clutch. I mean, I even had a one-on-one interview with Tiger Woods back in 2008 when mm-hmm. he was just known for being a fantastic golfer.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, you know, how have you been so great on the golf course over the years? And he says, you know what? I've been there more than everybody else. Uh-huh. I've been playing in tournaments since I was 5, and guess what? I failed under pressure more than anyone else. Well, that was very true on the golf course, and, you know, interestingly enough, the way he handled his personal scandal, I mean, that was some of the worst crisis PR I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue that he wasn't clutch in his personal decisions because he'd never had to face that before. He'd never had that level of scrutiny. He didn't know what to do.
So are you saying that you're a better clutch player when you fail at it a lot more than some people?
Not necessarily. You have to have that experience.
I really oversimplified that, didn't I?
Yeah. No, you didn't. But, you know, as I said in the beginning, you have to be able to do it under normal conditions first.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah. If you were in, you know, the game for the storm and were making 3-point shots to win the game, that would be a bit of luck because mm-hmm. I don't think you play basketball every day.
No.
But, you know, for somebody, and that's why it's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's, you know, whatever you are doing, if, you know, if you're hosting a radio show, if you're a mom, if you're, you know, working as an attorney in Seattle, you have to be good under normal circumstances before you can ever hope to be good under pressure. And that's how I draw the distinction between being clutch and being lucky.
Right on. So preparation is one of the big things for being a clutch player.
It is, absolutely.
Hey, I want to talk about Sergeant Willie Copeland.
Yeah.
And what happened with him in 2004 in Iraq and how he clutched it?
Yeah, he won a Navy Cross, which is the second highest honor that's awarded by the military. And he was in Fallujah. He was a sergeant, and his group came under attack. His Humvee was paralyzed, and they had to get out, and they were taking enemy fire. So he leads the charge across the field, knowing that throwing grenades isn't going to be enough, shooting is not going to be enough. He's really got to get close. And while he's doing this, his commanding officer, Captain Brent Morrell, is shot and doesn't notice at the time, but is mortally wounded. And so Copeland has to take over. And in the course of this, he is working at the highest possible level. He illustrates the third trait, adaptability. I mean, the plan for that Marine recon unit was to transport, to continue the convoy across Fallujah for nothing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as something happened, he snapped into action. He knew what to do. And the interesting thing about Copeland is I talked also to the person who trained him at the Marine Recon base, and he said Copeland was the least likely guy you would have ever thought to be a recon Marine. And I said, well, why is that? He says, well, most of these guys were extreme athletes or great lacrosse players or giant football players.
Mm-hmm.
Copeland was a skinny guy who liked to drink big gulp mugs of coffee, smoke cigarettes, and talk about the rodeo.
Oh.
Yet, he could fix anything. He had that mechanical mind, and he had a big heart. And you know what they train in the Special Forces, in the Navy SEALs, in the Marine Recon units, is they train these guys how to do well under pressure. And, and that's the key. Like, they took a very unlikely guy who wanted to put the effort in to be great under pressure, and they trained him. And that, to me, is a great way to show how something, I mean, that's an extreme example, hopefully none of us will have to face, but how that can be learned, how it can become a learned behavior.
That's so cool. I love it. It's a great story. Everybody on the show with me, Paul Sullivan. The name of the book is Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. So those people that don't, once again, you're saying they can.
Yeah, I mean, I make the distinction in the book that the traits that make people clutch are, they're very systematic.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can get better and you can learn them. Unfortunately, the traits that cause people, the qualities that cause people to choke, mm-hmm. are often more pervasive. You know, failure to accept responsibility, overconfidence, and overthinking your role in whatever it may be, the company, society, what have you. And, you know, we've all seen these people in mm-hmm. our day-to-day lives. Chances are, you know, many of them won't have to face a pressure situation. But I found through the research that those who did were never in the right frame of mind to deal with it.
So I see.
If you forever say, you know what, not my fault, I didn't do it, or
that's
that
somebody
guy
else's
there,
problem.
Done it.
Yeah.
That's not the guy you want. That's not the man or woman you want leading the company when the company comes under pressure.
Right on. Yeah, so that's a sort of a systemic problem that maybe some therapy is going to help out.
Let's hope.
All right. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. You're a great person to talk to, and your book is great too. Paul Sullivan, Clutch, Why Some People Excel Under Pressure and Others Don't. Thank you so much for joining me today.
I hope people go and buy it now. Amazon.com, my website, pauljsullivan.com.
It's all over it. They're all over it. They're going like this right now. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.